thank you for having me, inviting me to your network, for being here. I'm hoping that you might help me with some of my thinking about this topic. So I'm going to present to you some of my perhaps less defined thinking, and then I'll expand into stuff that I'm a bit more confident about. And that will make sense in a moment. The broad topic we're thinking about together is, how does cinema engage with theology, philosophy? How does, when we're watching a film, is there anything happening there in terms of our thinking about God? And how far do we understand that to travel or to go? How much of that is from us? How much of that is from God, potentially? What is cinema saying about religion sometimes? And I'm going to present two theses. There's a weaker thesis and then there's a stronger thesis. So the weaker thesis is the question, really, how does cinema overlap with theology in engaging with God and our beliefs? That's the sort of weaker claim. The stronger claim is film capable of doing philosophical and theological work? Is it actually a form of philosophy or a form of theological investigation and inquiry? The great Harvard film scholar, Stanley Cavell, who's probably the most important sort of philosopher who's engaged with the whole question of the ontology of film, what is film, how do we experience it, is Cavell, and he says all care about movies, all await them, respond to them, remember them, talk about them. And if you want to check out an important text in the beginning of the philosophy of cinema, his book, The World Viewed, is a very important first staging post. The filmmaker Werner Herzog says that cinema can express our collective dreams, and that's probably part of the real significance of it. And so what we're going to touch on is not just areas of sort of quite clear rational inquiry, but also perhaps some longings in the human heart might be mentioned as well. The poet Malcolm Guite quotes another poet, Michael O'Sheill, and he talks about how poetry is something that sort of jostles the soil of the imagination. This device here, this metal sieve, is called a riddle, and you would use it after you, if you have a little area you want to grow some vegetables in or some flowers, you would often have to dig over that area, particularly after the winter, if it's become compacted, opening up the soil, and then you might put the soil through the riddle to get a lovely fine grade of soil that the roots of the plant can nicely grow into. Is film functioning in a similar sort of way to poetry, and particularly poetic types of film, of which Malick might be a good example? Does it jostle the soil of our imaginations, and what happens in that mixture too? So let's come back to these thesis statements. What is this? What's happening? What am I trying to assert? So I'm taking a step here beyond simply redeeming film, and I'm going beyond trying to just take us from a kind of cultural nervousness about engaging with film, perhaps as religious believers. And I'm going beyond that step of taking us from disengagement to engagement. I'm going beyond that. That's normally what I'll be doing when I'm teaching people to use film in evangelism, helping them to sort of work out how they can engage safely, meaningfully, helpfully with film as an evangelistic kind of bridge point. I'll be doing that this afternoon, teaching that in an afternoon workshop, and that's a great fun thing to do. I'm also going to try to extend a little bit beyond simply looking for those illustrations and salvific parallels in film, just looking for these sort of echoes of the gospel in film. I'm going to talk about that a bit, but I'm going to try and take a step beyond that too. I'm going to try to articulate a way of this step that I want to take is what I would call taking film seriously. And I mean seriously by this. And this is really asking the question, is film a way of thinking about the world? Is it a way of reflecting on, engaging with, inquiring into the world in its broadest possible sense? So I'm going to offer three reasons why I think film is a form of philosophy and why in some instances it can be a form of rational inquiry. First argument is this. It's actually an emerging discipline. It has a journal. Film philosophy is dedicated to the engagement between film studies and philosophy and explores the ways in which films develop and contribute to philosophical discussion. So that's the first sort of way of thinking about it. The second argument is that film seems to would seem to need to be compatible with what we define as philosophy. So what counts as philosophy? Well, the broadest possible definition of philosophy we tend to talk about is this love of wisdom. So if some film could be shown to be doing some loving of wisdom, then maybe we'd be home and dry. That seems to me to be quite a weak, less demanding sort of staging post. Instead, the stronger claim is perhaps that philosophy, and for something to be counted as a form of philosophy, it would need to be making inferences. It would need to be making steps from evidence and reasons to conclusions. So for example, the phone rang, Peter picked it up, he was suddenly smiling, he was all smiles, so it could be inferred that he was happy to receive the phone call. Or a child is fed a new food by the mother or by the father, pulls a sour face. You know, I don't know if you've ever had that experience of feeding a lemon to a child, just to see what their reaction is. Maybe that's just me being cruel to my children. The screwed up face, you can infer from that, and we quite often infer from that, he doesn't like the taste of that food, or she doesn't like the taste of that new food. Now, it seems to me that film is well able to and does often make inferences. And often, the skill of the director is about carrying on the audience and the viewer with them to see the inferences that are justifiable within the plot or the developments of the characters. One example of this could be easily provided by looking at detective fiction as a genre of film, which relays the inferences of the detective to the viewer for their assessment. Have you guessed who did it yet? Is the question we will ask ourselves as we're watching these sorts of things. Here's an example of detective fiction, I think, offering some inferences. This is Sherlock, season one. So I've suggested that film is doing real thinking about the world. And the first reason I gave is that it was starting to be recognized as a new area in philosophy, film philosophy. And this path could perhaps be followed, and we might gain, or the field might gain, recognition in the same way that serious works of philosophical inquiry, such as the fictional literature of the French existentialists, has been seen as important and valid philosophy. So Camus is Outsider, Sartre's Nausea, Dostoevsky's Brothers Karamazov. The second reason that I deployed and offered, and this is actually more of an open-handed pondering, and I'd like your thoughts and reflections on this, is that a qualifying feature of a philosophy is that it makes inferences. And I suggested that even if this was the bar, then perhaps an observant viewer could spot inferences in films. In complete honesty, I actually don't know how to construct the argument that film is a form of philosophy. I'm not sure how to construct it or how to identify clearly that film is reasoning in the way that I understand philosophy to be doing. Because it does seem to me to still be the case, even with these two arguments, it does still seem to me to be the case that film involves a lot of trickery. It's fundamentally projected images on the wall of a cave, like Plato's Prisoner, shadows and echoes. We're not seeing the real things in themselves, are we? We're just seeing images or representations of them. So I have perhaps a sort of self-doubt about both of these reasons that I offer. Maybe there's another way, and this is the route I actually am taking, is can we show that philosophy, that film is doing philosophy and doing theology by actually doing the work in helpful and productive ways, by using the film to show that it alleviates and brings insights into questions and issues that we're wrestling with in theology and philosophy and apologetics, for example. So then this third line of reasoning is going to occupy the rest of the discussion that we'll spend time thinking about. And it's going to open up into a broader overlapping discussion of how film overlaps with theology, how people might talk about finding God in film or in cinema. It takes us into that territory of jostling the soil of the imagination. I'm going to talk about now about how film might be interacting with theology in particular. And I'm going to suggest two or three areas that we may find film is doing work and is doing thinking in specific areas. So in the area of dogmatic, systematic theology, I think the film is interacting and making contributions. In the area of ethics, clearly film is weighing up in many different situations, is weighing up the ethical dilemmas that various different characters have to decide what to do about. Then in the area of prophetic theology, there may be connections with forms of science fiction which are looking at a future world and are asking what's coming next with technology and that side of the discussion. I'll give a few examples of these in a moment through looking at film. And then in terms of reflective and invitational theology, we may find that film is also almost creating, like you were saying, about meaning in the viewer. We may also find that that sort of theological experience of the viewer is being stirred up or caused or brought about by what they're watching and by the film. And it can be done so quite deliberately. And I would argue that Terrence Malick is an example of somebody who's deliberately trying to do that kind of thing with the use of narrative voiceover and the use of montage and the camera shots which look up the trees into the sky at the light beyond the physical landscapes. I'm going to go through four areas now where I think we could see film doing work in theology and in philosophy and where we may find some connections. First area is this area of questioning and asking, speculating and inquiring. The German philosopher Wittgenstein talks about the idea of worldview or the underlying scaffolding under our beliefs, under our philosophy, under the way we think about the world. And I'm now going to show you about four or five films, which I think are getting you to question, getting the viewer to question this unseen underlying layer. And hopefully in doing so, you might agree with me that there's at least an engagement with our theology and with our philosophy occurring. And you might even go so far as to say, actually, it's raising questions as well as proposing some answers in what it's doing. So here are then five different interrogations of ideas, philosophies, theologies that we've just looked at. Eat, Pray, Love is getting at questioning religion, conventional religion. Avatar is questioning spirituality. Alfie seems to be doing some work on hedonism. Collateral is doing some work on atheism, naturalism. And The Thin Red Line is looking perhaps, is saying something about monism, I think critiquing it. You've also got within the handout a description within the genres, a genre study of different ways that film asks questions. So I think detective fiction is often asking questions about, can we know the truth? Can we get to the facts? Can we overcome human attempts to obscure and to hide it? I think that moral thrillers and ethical reasoning is often there in another genre, the kind of House kind of type of thing, or Dexter, or Juno, Atonement, The Watchmen, Dark Knight, even Toy Story 2, I think it's in there. No Country for Old Men, The Island, where people are cloned. The third type, I would say, within genre is how you can keep love, how you can hang on to love. Can you guess which genre this is from? Which genre of film? Romantic comedies, of course. Yeah, excellent. Films that deal with human nature. And actually, it's very hard to find a film that doesn't in some way say something, describe something of human nature. Why do human beings do things that are wrong? What explains murder or evil in the human soul? We seem fascinated by making films about serial killers, trying to understand, trying to make sense of what it is that's driving them. And then I've already briefly mentioned science fiction as well. What is worth living for? What can we hope for in the future? films about hope, purpose, all the way from The Matrix, Terminator, Ghost in the Shell, Gattaca, Into the Wild, Garden State, The Grey, and even Collateral as well. It seems appropriate then to quote Sam Peckinpah, a film director and screenwriter, who says, "I didn't want you to enjoy the film. I wanted you to look very closely at your own soul." I'm going to touch on storytelling and the view from inside and looking ahead. I'll just do a couple of minutes on each one. So it actually connects with what you were just saying. What was your name?
David.
David. It connects with what David was saying. So if we look at story as another potential interaction point between film, theology, and philosophy, then we might start to talk about narrative arcs and redemptive journeys. I think we go further here than film just posing questions and interrogating worldviews. I think we can also begin to see echoes or hear echoes of answers, whether it's the great battle between good and evil, whether it's the nature of the hero as being partly human, partly godlike. Superman, one example. Kal-El is his real name. He comes from another planet and struggles to have relationship because he's more on the god side than the human side. Whereas other heroes are more human, and we actually prefer more human heroes quite often. In analysis of story form, there has been talked about the idea of the monomyth, and Joseph Campbell, who I don't agree with his theology and philosophy, but he talks about the idea of a hero who ventures forth from a world of common day into a region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won, and the hero then comes back from that mysterious adventure with the power to bestow boons on fellow man. This has been sort of slightly updated in the light of the new Hollywood by Jewett and Lawrence, and they talk about the American monomyth, where a community and a harmonious paradise are threatened by an evil, either internal or external, and the normal institutions can't really deal with it. So a selfless superhero emerges, renounce temptations, or in the modern update, work through an identity struggle within themselves, and then carry out their task, often aided by fate. That is very, very important. That moment where it's not just them rescuing, there's something else comes in and rescues and helps them. And his decisive victory then restores the community to its paradisical condition. Superhero then sort of fades into the background. So people like Godawa, Brian Godawa, who's a screenwriter, screenwrote the film To End All Wars. He says things like this, like movie storytelling is about redemption, recovering something we've lost, finding something we need. Movies may be about story, but these stories are actually about centrally, crucially, primarily, mostly about redemption. I think we could point to lots of different films where we see redemptive action, where we see Katniss in the Hunger Games stepping in place of her younger sister, in her place, giving her life, sacrificing herself to go in the arena and to fight to survive. I think we see symbolic echoes all the way through The Revenant of the Gospel. If you've not seen The Revenant, a little bit of a spoiler, but here we go. The main character played by Leonardo DiCaprio, crawling through the whole film towards his eventual Oscar. He's attacked by a bear, left for dead. Then his son is killed, and he's buried in a kind of grave in the woods. Then some people come to finish him off in an act of revenge. He escapes from them, leaving his dead son. And all he has is hate and revenge in his heart at that point. He goes into the water, into a river to escape, and he's pretty much dead. He clings to a stick, a log, a bit of wood in the water. If you know theology and you know symbology, this is thick. So he's in the water, clinging to the stick. The stick takes him across the water to the other side, where he meets an unknown stranger who puts him in a dark tent for 3 days. He comes out of that dark tent somewhat restored, and then a miracle of a horse dying sort of somehow escapes him out of the jaws of people pursuing him. He then survives by sitting in the warm body of the horse, which then gives him life overnight, and he then escapes. And then eventually he has to decide whether he renounces revenge or not. I mean, very, very strong religious symbolism in the movie, an echoing, I think, of the gospel, which is not totally surprising, given Alejandro González Iñárritu and his Catholic background. I think that, just going back to that thing in the monomyth of fate aiding the hero, I think there's a connection point with Tolkien and the use of eucatastrophe. In Lord of the Rings, we see him very clearly putting religious elements into the story. This is an extract from letter 142, where he confesses that he's done this. Unconsciously at first, so this is back to our conversation about the film director, the filmmaker, or the screenwriter, scriptwriter, or even the story writer, puts things into the thing that are unconscious, and then later in the revision, and I'm sure that's the case later on. I do think Peter Jackson's version of The Lord of the Rings somewhat reduces and thins out some of the layers that Tolkien adds to it. But for Tolkien, this turnaround moment where Frodo goes to take the ring and Gollum grabs the ring instead, then neither one of them are going to throw the ring into Mount Doom, which is what they both ought to do. Somehow in the tussle, the ring falls, it's destroyed, and neither one of them at that moment intended it. They're heroes, but it's, or at least Bilbo's a hero, but it's not as a result of what he's done. Something else has come in and rescued him. And Tolkien talks about this idea of the eucatastrophe, the unexpected calamity, the good calamity. And he talks about linking this to Christ. And I think there's echoes thick and fast in stories with those fateful turnaround moments where the hero's done everything they can, they can't do anything more, and something comes in and rescues them. Now, for Tolkien in Lord of the Rings, that's the being Ilúvatar. And also in his faith, it's God sending Jesus and the resurrection. I mentioned briefly two other categories, 30 seconds on each of these. I'm not a big fan of Christian movies, sorry if you've invested in them. I think that they can, however, show us a view from inside the faith, and it can be a bit like inviting somebody to read the Bible with you, and they see by its applications to life and transformations that it can have an effect and it can engage with our lives. So I do think there's a value in some Christian film. The Case for Christ is my favorite Christian film in that genre, but I think the rest are a bit strawman-y. Then the final category I wanted to mention was the way that science fiction could function in terms of looking into the future and describing what would happen in the future. And I think there are all sorts of conversations we can have about theology there. One example of this would be transcendence and its taking up of the theme of transhumanism, for example, the idea of unrestricted progress. And I would probably bring that to land somewhere like 1 Peter 1, where we're told that we actually have a living hope in Christ and we don't need to put our trust in technology. Thank you for having me in your network. Hope you make use of all those resources in the handout. Thank you for your critiques, questions, and comments. It's been great to be with you.